If You Give a Scientist a Pillow, a Stargate Atlantis fic featuring Rodney McKay and Coffee. Written by Tasmi. Read by Start With Alex. Cover art by Cassiope25. Additional tags for humour, coffee rationing, blanket forts, strike, friendship, post-mission stress relief. Author summary. If the SGC felt in their ignorance that Rodney didn't need more coffee, then maybe Rodney felt he didn't need to work after all. Rodney tended to work many more hours than anyone else on Atlantis, and only begrudged the fact that he was kept from working more. What was a reasonable 70-hour work week when living in a mystical city full of technology waiting to be discovered that could either solve all their woes or wreak devastation on everything they loved? What was a mere 80-hour work week when living in a galaxy with vampiric monsters determined to make meals out of his colleagues while Rodney watched in horror, desperately typing away through the evening in order to save as many as he could while the rest slipped by, their existence extinguished far too soon, even knowing that he himself was already living on borrowed time? This was why, much to Carson's chagrin, Rodney required many, many, many cups of coffee to make it through his day. His blood pressure be damned, the consequences of not working scaled new, previously inconceivable heights. Elusive sleep could catch him later. He had a galaxy to save, even if sometimes from himself. The last drop of coffee plopped loudly into Rodney's empty cup. Naturally, he immediately reached for a refill, but was stopped by the quartermaster of all people, who informed him Earth was now rationing an unfathomable 3 cups of coffee per person per day. Apparently, they balked at the vast number of cups a day Rodney and his underlings required. Yes, required. They, for some imbecilic reason, disagreed that the Lantean coffee supply required a full third of the Daedalus's cargo hold. The SGC, for some reason, felt it important to make space for less necessary items, such as radiation suits, new uniforms, armaments, and medicines. Rodney eviscerated the quartermaster, one Sergeant Rodriguez, both verbally and with laser-pointed, fury-filled glares. Alas, the coffee pot remained empty. Unfortunately, threats of cold showers for a week did little to persuade the trembling serviceman, who could not, so he claimed, make coffee appear from thin air. Rodney was still busy devising new threats when Lorne intervened, telling Rodney to take a walk. So instead of continuing to berate the worst quartermaster Atlantis had ever hired, Rodney found himself at Elizabeth's door. Elizabeth, while sympathetic and understanding, explained calmly, as though to a toddler asking for his 4th round of ice cream, that without enough ZPMs and a functioning way for Earth to gate in supplies, they were simply required to make do. Which would have perhaps made sense if they were talking about anaesthesia meds or MREs. This, however, was coffee. With much hand-waving and sighing, Elizabeth promised that she would at least look into finding space, but not, as Rodney suggested, by requiring Daedalus personnel to share more crew persons per quarters, emptying rooms so they could be filled with towering coffee supplies. Rodney stormed towards his lab, but stopped instead at his side office, having the foresight to realise that his coffeeless inner monster was likely to snap at the first request to check calculations. The pillow and blanket in his office called to him with their siren song, reminding him that he did, in fact, need to sleep. He could have gone to his quarters, allowing himself to have worked just the 50-hour week Carson was always pushing for, but, well, this coffee shortage was unacceptable, and Rodney refused to admit defeat. The stakes were simply too high for him to give up and wait on Elizabeth's diplomacy. He grabbed said blanket and pillow, along with 2 chairs, and dragged them to a corner of the corridor. He draped the blanket over the chairs, creating a fort-like structure, then crawled in and settled himself against the pillow. After a minute of staring, "Ha! A whole wasted minute! Take that, coffee-hoarding SGC morons!" Rodney realised he was bored. He scrambled out of the fort, ignoring his aching bones and sore muscles that were still healing from last month's debacle and life-saving heroics, returned to his office, and raided the mini-fridge. He then nestled back into the fort with snacks in hand and a Game Boy. If the SGC felt, in their ignorance, that Rodney didn't need more coffee, then maybe Rodney felt he didn't need to work after all. 2 weeks after John carried Rodney through the gate, barely breathing and steadily trickling blood onto John's combat boots, John hid away in his office, staring at a blank screen, trying to find the words to describe the FUBAR incident. This amounted to possibly the third report in as many months where one of their team members ended up knocking on death's door, thankfully to be told that actually death wasn't quite ready to deal with them yet. Not that John or his teammates had any death wish, despite what certain psychologists may have implied during their last mandatory session, but rather that death seemed oddly obsessed with toying with them. And for whatever reason, whether insanity or misplaced guilt, John and his team continued to play along, going through the gate time and time again. The report stubbornly refused to write itself. John closed his laptop, curling his head into his arms, readying for a bit of a nap, exhausted from too many sleepless nights worrying. Even now that Rodney was back at work, mostly healed, John's nightmares kept reminding him how it could have gone had John not managed to find Rodney in time. It was annoying that Rodney insisted on messing with John's already disordered sleep schedule so regularly. John would have to maybe talk to him about it, or rather, not talk to him about it, but instead mumble about the subject by way of a silent pout, careful not to let on about how he cared for Rodney, and how he didn't know what he'd do when death finally welcomed Rodney in. John's doorbell chimed. Lorne strode in. "We have a problem with Dr. McKay, sir." John straightened, immediately ready to jump into full crisis and protection mode, which turned out to be more of his normal operating mode as opposed to the calm, serene one of simply dealing with the everyday life-threatening crises that plagued Atlantis. What now? He verbally accosted Sergeant Rodriguez about the coffee rationing. Yeah, that was never going to go down well. No, sir. I had him take a walk, and that seemed to work, but then things escalated.
Escalated?
It's mostly just fire code violation, sir. We've been trying to deal with it all day, but he refuses to cooperate. Before Lorne could explain further, the door chimed again. Zelenka stormed in, his wild hair poked out in all directions. He sputtered. "Rodney is acting like a Lini Zadek. You must speak to him about this madness before he explodes the city."
"Explodes?"
John jumped to his feet and flew out the door, rushing towards the transporters with Radek and Lorne close behind. John didn't know fully what to expect. Promises of explosions and irate scientists had prepared him for dangerous experiments, a wildly gesticulating mad Rodney, and some flaming ancient technology. Instead, he found a placid corridor covered in blankets and pillows, scientists sipping tea and conversing, laughing, reading, or otherwise doing anything other than work. Definitely nothing here screamed of crisis, although, yes, this definitely violated all fire codes. Rodney's fort was tucked away in the corner. He sat on the pillows playing with his Game Boy while Dr. Kusanagi asked him if he could please consider looking over some results before tomorrow's big experiment, which John guessed was the basis for Radek's concerns that they might all go up in a fiery blaze. Rodney refused to look, but pointed out that Dr. Kusanagi was more than welcome to build her own fort and join in the protest.
Protest? Ah.
So, this is about the coffee. At hearing John's voice, Rodney's brow furrowed. He gave an annoyed glance toward Lauren and then Zelenka. "We're not moving," Rodney declared, chin tilted up in defiance. John gauged Rodney's determination level to be somewhere around 100 on a 1 to 10 scale, which meant arguing was pointless. Meanwhile, the forts called to John with promises of restful escape. So he looked at the pile of unused pillows against the wall, an unusual number given Atlantis's small supplies, and made his choice. He began to build. Zelenka threw his arms up in exasperation. Then, with a defeated sigh, he strode over to the blankets, apparently deciding the wild explosion experiments could be delayed after all, and began to settle his own place. Lorne grabbed a pole and helped him build, deciding that two people building a fort could do better than one. John appraised Rodney's fort, realizing that it had at least two more pillows than his. This needed correcting. With the pile of available materials depleted, John disappeared to his quarters and grabbed several more. Then, realizing Rodney might think to make the same move, he hurried over to Rodney's quarters to also take his supply. It suddenly became clear just who had been hoarding Atlantis's comfort items. Seriously, who needed 10 pillows? Rodney peeked out from his fort, glowering when he saw John's new load, so John smirked knowingly. "Hey, those are mine." "Not any more," Rodney answered with a series of gesticulations and exclamations, as though he were conducting a symphony of complaints. Then he asked Dr. Kusanagi to guard his fort while he sought out more comforts. Sure enough, he returned some minutes later with an entire cart full of pillows, sheets and blankets. John appraised the plain white and blue colours, the thin fabric and the general scratchy appearance, at once concluding where they came from. Thus, he was not at all surprised when Carson arrived, hands on hips, demanding to know why the infirmary was suddenly bereft of its stash. But as he looked upon the sea of forts and the unusually relaxed atmosphere, he visibly softened. "What's all this, then?" "Coffee," Rodney said, as though the reason should be obvious enough. "Join us?" Carson didn't press further. "Aye, well, it's good to see you all finally taking a break. You lot work much too hard." "Which is why we need coffee," Rodney answered, scooching over to make room for Carson in his now extended fort. This, oddly, made John's heart sink. He looked from his fort to Rodney's and back again, then made a choice. Rodney made no comment as John pulled out several poles and a few blankets from the cart, connecting their forts from across the corridor. Then, taking a casual seat next to his friend, John carefully gauged how close he could be near Rodney without making it awkward. "What are you doing?" Rodney asked suspiciously, but he scooted closer to John, completely throwing all of John's calculations out the window. Carson shifted over, allowing them their space, knowing full well the silent connection between them that neither would ever admit to. As long as Carson said nothing, and Rodney feigned obliviousness, John could pretend no one else but him knew of his inner pining. Taylor and Ronan joined at some point, delivering hot tea, which was warmly welcomed by all, especially when Rodney realized a Thosian Burl tea contained as much caffeine as a double espresso. Elizabeth fixed them all with an admonishing glare, but it landed on laughter and joy that refused to be silenced. John saw her gaze fall upon Rodney's scar. Instantly, her frustration vanished. She left without further complaint, returning a short while later with gooey faux chocolate chip cookies and an apologetic quartermaster. "How long do you think you can keep this up?" she asked. "Until our reasonable coffee demands have been met," Rodney replied, as cookie crumbs sprinkled onto his blanket. John knew Elizabeth to be a wise negotiator, wise enough to see that this was a battle she could not win. She gave one last glance toward Rodney's scar. "Very well. I'll tell Caldwell that he'll need to figure something out." She then grabbed a cookie and settled into the fort with Cadman and Taylor. Rodney's aching muscles groaned as he surreptitiously inched closer to John once more. He leaned against the pillows and smiled. With Elizabeth's tacit approval of Fort Town and Taylor's potent espresso tea, he found himself unusually at peace. Technological marvels and vampiric monsters could wait. Today was for rest. The end.